show out, coming out of WBAI in New York. And that movie, again, is, what's it called? On the Counselor's kids did.
You have to see
Disturbing
it.
It's the Universe. Attica, incredibly Attica, powerful.
It's Attica, Chicago 7, and Pine Ridge. And
yeah, he was in the courtroom protesting when Bobby Seale was being gagged and bound because there really wasn't free speech.
You knew him, Dennis. You know that you'll never meet anyone like him in whatever life we have left, right?
I love you, Randy. We're going to leave it there. You're listening to, you're hearing this on Flashpoints Pacifica Radio.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the winter of despair. In short, the period was very much like the present period.
You're listening to Community Radio, KBOO Portland.
Hello? 1, 2, 3.
KBOO is loud and proud. Become a member during our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots, independent, radically made community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give and help us reach our $45,000 goal. Thank you.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from the Urban League of Portland, celebrating its 80th anniversary as a local civil rights organization. Urban League PDX provides housing, education, health care, and career services to local communities. Membership information at ulpdx.org.
1, 2, 3, 4. Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
Hold up.
and bring about our liberation. We're gonna end the devastation. We want true emancipation. Someday justice will prevail in every heart and home. Our spirit will not fail. From the river to the sea, let our dreams take flight for a future filled with peace. We'll stand and unite.
David D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. Wanted to play a song to kind of set the pace. It is from some good friends that are part of a band called the Shadow Band. They're going to be doing something this weekend, and we'll tell you about it because it is for a good cause, bringing attention to what is going on in Palestine and Gaza. These are folks that are not only gifted musicians, but they're organizers and activists, and they're doing things that are making a difference. One is a producer extraordinaire. We know him as Tariq Eccentric, and the other one is a singer, Naima Shaoub. And welcome to the show, both of you. And last time I had you on, Tariq, we were talking about this project that you had. Initially, it was just you and your wife, and now I know it's a lot of other people are involved, but Prosthetics for Palestine. Let's talk a little bit about that organization. Is it almost a year that you did this?
It's just over a year.
Just over a year.
Officially, we launched publicly in October last year. But before, we were working out networking and building our kind of crew for about like 3 to 4 months prior to that. So yeah, it's been over a year since we decided we were just going to dedicate our time and most of our effort to this very important project. You know,
what does the project do?
So basically, as you said, it did start. It actually started with my wife's idea. She was like, "We need to do something. We need to get prosthetics in, like we talked about before." And in our opinion, it's one of the biggest needs on the ground in Gaza, because you know, mobility is a very critical thing when people are being forced from place to place to place. The Israelis are always putting, you know, evacuation orders in one area, so people got to move from. Right now, there's a huge exodus from Gaza City, unfortunately, which is one of the most densely populated places on Earth, still is, regardless of the genocide. And so that's crazy. And if you think about, you know, a father or a mother or, you know, an elderly person or even children who are, you know, recently amputated or have recently amputated limbs, you know, mobility is a very difficult thing for them. Basically, we're a grassroots-led effort now. We have well over 30 people involved in our organization. We are a project now of Physicians for Palestine, which is an awesome organization that's been around for a couple decades now, consisting of orthopedic surgeons, other surgeons, pediatricians, all kinds of doctors, and a lot of prosthetists. And we brought a lot more prosthetists into their fold. So now we've kind of unified on this project, and it's a beautiful thing. We're getting closer to a lot of our goals, and it's been great.
How are you all able to get prosthetics into Gaza, considering all the type of stuff that we're hearing, where food is not being let in and people aren't being let out and all that?
Well, right now we haven't been able to get anything into Gaza except for a few medical supplies, and I can't really talk about that because, you know, whatever.
Right.
It's almost impossible to get anything in, but there are ways. People use different methods, and there are certain organizations that are able to get tiny amounts of things in. So it's been a trickle, and when I say a trickle, that is probably an overstatement, but we've partnered with organizations in Gaza, and we've actually identified and have about 10 amputees that we are currently in the process of treating. So the beauty of that is that if and when something does open up, we have our immediate infrastructure ready to go, and those patients will be treated as soon as possible. So that's the good thing. We're not just sitting around waiting for something to happen. We're actually proactively pursuing the project. But then also, so we're not just wasting our time sitting around waiting, we're also building infrastructure in the West Bank. So we are going to build a potentially, and it's in the works, but obviously you know that the West Bank is now the second front in this genocide, and settler attacks have stepped up in an insane amount. The Israelis are basically hell-bent on depopulating the entire indigenous population of Palestine, and they've said it openly. Now they have this new sort of macabre idea that they're forcing every NGO that serves the Palestinian people to re-register, and the new parameters for that are draconian and insane, and a lot of organizations. Wow. So yeah, there's a lot. They're just pulling out all the stops to make life absolutely miserable for anybody trying to either for Palestinians on the ground, obviously most importantly, but also for any organization that's attempting to lessen the misery and to get much needed aid to people. So given that, we are still pursuing all options, whether that looks like a clinic in Ramallah, whether that looks like a clinic in Amman, Jordan, whether that looks like a clinic in Cairo or in Egypt, somewhere else in Egypt, it doesn't matter. We are being fluid, and we're being strategic, and we're not sitting
right. Appreciate that. That's Tariq eccentric. Nima, what would you add to what he's been talking about? And, you know, just kind of how have you been able to process just the sheer angst and terror that is, and gaslighting that is constantly being hoisted up? We're told if we have a conversation like this, somehow we cross some sort of invisible line, and we're anti-Semitic, or, you know, some sort of nefarious, you know, label gets attached to us. We're also told that what we're seeing is not really happening. It's literally like we're watching this in real time. I'm being told that slavery wasn't that bad and we need to change the museums here. And I'm also being told what I'm seeing is not really a genocide. It's just targeted individuals that are doing bad. And so when we're talking about efforts like this, you have people that are sitting in some powerful places that are frowning on this and literally saying this is not needed. So from your standpoint, you know, as an activist, singer, Palestinian, how are you seeing this?
I mean, I think with everything, even the way you just kind of shared and painted this picture and drawing these connections, right? Like these ideologies are not new, right? These belief systems of oppression are not new. And I think it's so important that as this gaslighting continues, and that's one of the tactics of imperialism, colonization, it's the divide and conquer. And that can very easily trickle within our communities if we're not careful. And so I think for me, there is rage, right? There is just even like a disbelief sometimes at the potential of evilness that humans can inflict on others and what power can do when it's not checked, when there's no checks, when there's no accountability, what billions and trillions can do to corrupt the human soul, what Zionism, racism, the potential of evil there, and what we can do. I think for me, in order to not completely let the processing of that like decompose my brain and my heart,
right,
I feel like I have to have a responsibility, you know, being on this unceded soil, right, of this land that was never reconciled to those who the indigenous stewards, but also those who were forced here, Black, indigenous, you know, our peoples. And so I feel like when it comes to Palestine, as an Arab woman, as a Lebanese woman, a cousin of Palestinians, if you will, It's like, I don't sing to the people in power, right? I sing to us. I sing music with us, because that's where I feel like we need to continue to nurture and build power. Because if I just speak to power all day long, that like small p and these people who are freaking trying to now take over Gaza City and say that slavery never existed, it's like, I'm sorry. Like, you'll never listen to me. You'll never acknowledge me. So I'm not going to talk to you. I'm not going to talk to you. There's a time and a place in mass where that's important, right? In civil disobedience, in protests, in our boycott, divestment, sanctions. I feel like that is a language that can potentially and will crack that. I mean, that's a whole different conversation, but
right. So you're not looking to see that if some of these folks with these beliefs have a moral center. I think it's devoid of that at this point in time.
We're seeing that. We've been seeing that. It's clear. It's hundreds and if not thousands of years old. Hundreds of years old in this context of Turtle Island, right? And how that this place called the United States was conceived. So I think for me, I need to be careful not to slip into a tactic that they almost want me to have. You know, they want me to get caught and forget that we have our own type of power. They want that. They want us to completely forget. They want us to be pawns. They want us to be robots. They want us to be AI programmed brains and not actually like remember that actually we've always known how to resist. The tactics have to change. The strategies have to change. But I think that like art can be that center, and like spirituality for me, but like art can be that center where it can kind of challenge us to think outside these boxes that we're forced to live in.
You gave us a lot to really build on, Naima. Thank you for that. Tarek, let me ask you, you know, kind of building off that. You know, culture has always been a weapon, right? Many of us who were left with nothing only had cultural expression as a way to, you know, do a whole lot, communicate subversively, to heal ourselves, to console ourselves, to empower each other, et cetera, et cetera. And we're seeing a clamp down on that in many ways. You said Free Palestine, you can't be in our movie. You had a watermelon shirt on, we can't record your record. You did a song, you know, calling for liberation, we're not gonna distribute you. And if we do, you know, in honor of your band, you will be shadow banned. Exactly. I'll play upon that.
Yeah, that was a very clever name. Naima actually came up with the name shadow band. We were just going over how do we explain, like, kind of, because we're mostly a instrumental band, but there's definitely a message behind what we do, and you know, the events that we pursue and the things that we're, you know, kind of involved with, obviously is about messaging. And yeah, we were going over brainstorming, and we were just like, this, and she's like, shadow band. I was like, that's it, boom, shadow band, that's the one.
There you go.
Brilliant on her part.
But that's a very real thing that's happening, though.
Oh, yeah.
You know, go ahead.
I'm sorry. But I would say that there's also a blowback. You know, there is this shadow banning on behalf of Meta and Google and Apple and all these other, you know, all the, and then not to mention like the labels and the Hollywood studios and, you know, the whatever X, Twitter, whatever that Musk's thing is called nowadays. But the blowback, as we've seen, is like, look at what happened with Bob Villain, for instance. You know, they knew that Kneecap would be shadow banned on the BBC at the Glastonbury Festival. So then they said, you know, we're going to take that mantle because we have the same morals, we have the same ethical center as you guys, and we are going to go out there and we're going to chant down genocide. And they went out there and they said one of the most iconic things, one of the most iconic chants ever. And it was so controversial to say death, death, to, you know, to the IDF. Yet it caught on like wildfire, because everybody's like, wow, somebody's finally saying something that needs to be said. Like, right. Murder the murderers, in a sense, you know, get rid of the right. Absolute horror.
Can you give people the backstory of that for folks who don't know? Because I know we know Bob Dylan, but we don't know the other group that you mentioned. But
Kneecap.
Kneecap, thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Explain to our audience who they are and what happened to them.
Well, so essentially, I'm not really the biggest connoisseur of either of these bands. You know, they actually came to me through them having amazing solidarity. Bob Villain is from the UK. I'm not sure exactly where, and then Kneecap is an Irish hip hop group. Bob Villain is a punk rock group. But they're actually, I listen to some of their music. They're actually pretty dope. It's a mix of like industrial, of kind of modern punk, and definitely like hip hop and even like hardcore. Like, you know, they're pretty interesting. It's a duo too, so that's kind of cool. But anyway,
I'm glad you clarified that, because when you said Bob Dylan, I thought you said Bob Villain. I thought you were talking about Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan got involved with Kneecap. I was like, whoa.
No. I think Bob Dylan is. I think Bob Dylan might be a Zio, unfortunately.
Oh no!
Don't tell the people in Berkeley; they'll be very mad. But but so Bob Villain, no, it's a black punk rock group from the UK. Right. And they were both Kneecap, which is an Irish group, and Bob Villain were both on the bill at the Glastonbury Festival. It's a huge festival every year in the UK. The BBC, because of Kneecap's outspoken criticism of the state of Israel and their outspoken anti-genocide stance, and they say it at every one of their concerts. They put the Palestinian flag out there with the Irish flag. They're very proudly anti-Zionist. The BBC, of course, as we know now, some of their top editors are their international editor is like a former IDF messaging guy. So, of course, they're going to censor somebody that has a principled stance on human rights and genocide, because, you know, that's in direct contradiction to the Zionist entity, which is built to destroy human rights, built to destroy international law, built to create, you know, establish or reassert the, you know, the racist, white supremacist Western order, you know, interestingly enough. But anyway, so what I'm going back to is like the blowback from the shadow banning is that when Bob Villain did speak out, and they were in fact broadcast, unlike Kneecap, who was banned from the broadcast, they were live on TV. And when they chanted Free Palestine and they chanted death, death to the IDF, it became, quote unquote, a viral moment. And it also boosted their profile. People started listening to their records like crazy. It made, and of course, they were banned from all their U.S. concerts. I think they had a couple tours in Europe banned. But it didn't matter, because the interest in them and the sort of support for them as a band increased tenfold. And so it backfired, you know. And I think that that's also what's happening in the sort of in the internet verse, in the online social media world, where it's like everybody knows that Palestinian voices are being shadow banned, and everybody knows that Palestinian voices are being censored. So very, you know, people you wouldn't expect to be voices for Palestine, like Miss Rachel, pop out of nowhere, and you're like, oh wow, yeah. And like, and now Mark Ruffalo, the actor, is like extremely active, talking about everything. Right. And you know, like before, we had Amanda Seales, and we had a handful of actresses and actors, and now there's like a massive, I'd say that there's a huge movement of people that have jumped on to standing up for human rights and for Palestinian rights. And what's another beautiful thing is that Palestine is connected to so many other issues and so many other movements, and particularly the genocide in Congo. They're very much so connected. Strangely enough, also the carnage and the genocide in Sudan, because look who's allied with, you know, the Israelis, the UAE, and look who is part of the entire the raping of Congolese minerals, the Israelis. And so, you know, it's all connected. And so the beauty of that is that people are now onto that as well and speaking about all these things. I mean, not unfortunately, not with equal time. I think Palestine has really taken forefront for many reasons, but also, you know, it's good that this is like, this is a pan-global movement. I think that's a very important thing.
Right. Naima, anything you want to add to that as well?
No, I would just double down on the connections that Tariq just laid out with Congo, Sudan, Palestine. These are obviously like different struggles, but the connections, like, we just can't all talk about that enough to make sure that we're united and name the differences in really responsible ways too, and honor those differences, but connect them nonetheless. And Palestine just continues to, unfortunately, be this nexus, right? And people have been saying that now for years, this nexus of different struggles, resistances, mm-hmm. but also a lot of oppressive structures.
Right. Just a side note, Dan Gertler, people yep. should know that name.
Yes,
that's
they should.
The big diamond magnet that's been wrecking havoc in the Congo. And of course, he's a good old boy that, you know, rides hard for the Zionists and in Israel. That's him.
He's one of the biggest settlement builders there. He underwrites settlements and all over.
Yeah, so that's the guy that's all up in the Congo exploiting the diamonds and the minerals that are there. And we should know that name and not let it tip off into the night somewhere.
I'm glad you said his name.
Yeah, we did a whole thing on him a couple of months ago when we were covering the Congo situation. Let me ask you all this. Sunday, mm-hmm. Shadow Band, we get to see you all. You're doing a fundraiser for Prosthetics for Palestine. Talk yes. a little bit about where you're all going to be and what to expect and, yeah. you know, what time and all those details.
Thank you, David D. Tariq, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, for sure. So Sunday, it's going to be in Danville at Peace Lutheran Church. It's at 3201 Camino Tassajara in, like I said, Danville. There'll be a reception with different vendors, and we'll have wine. And lots of interesting people hanging out. Hopefully you want to join us. 4 p.m. is the time that it starts, and the band will be going on around 5. So,
okay.
Yeah. So, like I said, reception from 4 to 5, and then music from 5 to 6:30. Though, like I said, there'll be vendors of Palestinian art, light refreshments. Like I said, wine from my friend Jahan.
And what's the address again?
The address is 3201 Camino Tassajara. It's Tassajara in Danville, California, in the sunny okay. East Bay. And the pastor reached out to us because they do a jazz series at the church, and some of their
aesthetics. They reached pardon? Out to- They reached out to Prosthetics for Palestine.
Yeah, they reached out to Prosthetics for Palestine. Yes, thank you, Naima. One of their parishioners has been a fan of our band for a while since we named ourselves the Shadow Band, and was like, oh, you know, you should get this band, and we should definitely do a fundraiser for Palestine. And the pastor was like, oh, I want to do it for Prosthetics for Palestine. So they reached out, and it all came together, and here we are. There's pre-sale tickets available. If you go to prostheticsforpalestine.org or you go to physiciansforpalestine.org, either one of those websites, and go down to campaigns or support, you will see that it'll lead you to or you can go to the calendars, and that'll lead you to the Better World page, and the Better World page will give you the direct link to where to buy tickets. And I know people still want to hear, I don't know if they want to hear a whole URL on here, but basically just go to prostheticsforpalestine.betterworld.org, and that will take you straight to where you see the Shadow Band Peace Concert at Peace Lutheran.
Okay. Well, we appreciate you coming in and sharing with us this afternoon. I'll start off with you, Naima. Anything you want to leave our listeners with in terms of what ideally we should all be doing at this moment when we're witnessing some of the horrors that have been coming out of these regions? We're listening to these, you know, saber rattling and drums of war, you know, that I don't think they want to stop in Gaza or the West Bank, you know. I think they're looking at Lebanon too, you know, and Iraq and other places, and, you know, and want to really make this, you know, when we're hearing this expansionist type of language, I think they're trying to line up the ducks and see how they can be like a mini U.S., you know, in that entire region with all the tools of oppression at their fingertips. So what do you want to leave us with? We kind of know that that is in the wings.
Yeah, I think two things come to mind for me. One, it's important that we are, you listeners, we are in community with each other right now, of people that you trust, that can care for each other. Because number two, requires a lot of persistence. It requires a lot of remembering what is real and not real. I mean, mm-hmm. with the advent of AI, that's just the beginning, right? What is real, what is not real? And that is of service to empire often, right? What is real, what is not real? What is true, what is not true? And we need to be surrounded right. by community that we can hold each other, we can nurture each other, because the outward facing of that is consistently to, you know, be a part of organizing, of different actions, of boycott, divestment, sanctions. Like, we can't lose sight of how important that is. Ways to, although it's such a huge thing that's happening, but to not give up on these ways where we can still make dents in the system and remind the world that we are united, we are still here, and we're not gonna just give up. We're not just gonna like right. down. And that's never happened. Our ancestors didn't do that, and we're not gonna do that. And it's gonna look differently. I think the third thing is that it doesn't all have to look the same. So this cookie cutter activist thing, I'm hoping we're past that. And that if right. you're an artist, art, if you're a teacher, teach. If you're a plumber, do your plumbing. You know what I'm saying? It's not just one way. And there are unified ways, like I said, boycott, divestment, sanctions, that we can unite on. But we are so beautifully different, and we have to make sure we continue to stay that way, because that's where power lies, right? We all get into the trenches where we can, and we shine that way. So just continuing to be a part of mobilizing, and to continue to honor and uplift the ways that our communities are different too, and show up for each other.
Real talk. And that's a lot to take in and really hold on to, you know. So I'm glad you said that, making those connections, and yeah, not be caught up in the cookie cutterness, you know, because that in itself kind of replicates some of the things we're fighting. Tariq, last comments from you, and also the address one more time.
Yeah, well, I'll give the address at the end, I guess. But I would definitely what Naima said, extremely important. And what I think has happened, unfortunately, is that the working class, and I don't mean to sound like a typical socialist, but the working classes have been fractured by the right wing. Now they've got, you know, every, like you said, the plumbers, you know, they've got everyday people who used to be, who used to believe in labor and used to believe that their collective voices was power, have been fractured. And I think when we get back to understanding that our communities should be unified in so many different ways, and we just got to shed the divide and conquer, the divide and rule, you know, we have to shed it. I know that one part of the cookie cutter activism is that, you know, if we're not aligned on one issue, then we just hate each other on all the rest of the issues, because all that right. politics are problematic, or whatever kind of language we use. We need to move past that. And we really do, especially for the sake of, like, for the sake of all of our communities, because, you know, going back to the way that Zionism, it has its tentacles in every negative thing on earth. You know, we could look at cop cities in America. We could look at, like we said, Congo and Sudan. We could look at what they're doing to Yemen, what they did to Iraq already. I mean, the Iraq right. war was based on faulty, you know, evidence from the Israelis. And not to mention that they're basically stealing southern Lebanon, and they've already stolen the mountains of Syria. So, you know, this expansionist thing, it's meant to divide, conquer, and destroy all of our collectivity, all of our self-determination. So the harder we fight, the better we fight, and the more unified we fight and put aside those differences and just put our heads down and make it happen, I think the better. And art plays a major role in that. And I stand before that. I think we need more art in our movement. We need more music in our movement. We need more people dancing in our movement. We need more people singing. We need more rappers. We need more everything. Like, we just need it. That's one of the most important things. And now I will shut up and give you the address once again. It is Peace Lutheran Church at 3201 Camino Tassajara in Danville, California. Peace Lutheran Church. And again, it starts at 4 o'clock. We'll have an hour long reception with light refreshments and some wine and some cool Palestinian vendors. Then music starts at 5, and we will play a nice set for you guys, and we'll raise lots of money for Prosthetics for Palestine and Physicians for Palestine, and hopefully get medical aid and prosthetics ASAP.
Well, I appreciate you, Tariq. Appreciate you, Naima, for you joining us.
The Hard Rock Nate Radio all day long.
All day long.
Appreciate that.
You guys are legendary.
And since you mentioned Yemen, we should remind people, because it's something that wasn't really headline news, that Israel took out the prime minister, Ahmed Rahawi, I believe is his name. And so that's something that we need to look at, and it's kind of underscored that expansionism that we were talking about. But we are going to consolidate and become one as a people and support each other and uplift, and together we're all going to ride this out and be victorious. So thank you for joining us. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio, and we'll see you Sunday. We're out for now. Peace.
Maya,
who?
My last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah.
Welcome to PNN, Poor People's Revolutionary Radio. This is Lamonte, your co-host, formerly Houseless Poverty Scholar, with Wych Street Commons and Poor Magazine's Family in Studio with Poe Poets, and formerly Houseless Poverty Scholar Mutiado and Tiny.
Happy Houseless Workers Day. Because just to stay alive, we work in every single day. Happy Poor Workers Day. From your dirty plates to your toilet bowls scraped, without this hard labor, how can you even have your sunny vacays? Happy Houseless Workers Day. I'm out here standing in the sun with a cardboard cup for hours, begging for a little love or a little changed luck. Happy Poor Workers Day. Disappeared and border terrorized, even though we watch your baby sleep, eat, and play, so you can perpetuate your 50-hour corp rape work day. Happy Houseless Workers Day. Scrounging in dumpsters for a scrap of food or a bit of bread. Sun up, sun down, our work is all across the settler towns, tinged and watched with your disdain. What are those bums doing? Why don't they get a job? Begins your sentence of hate. Happy Houseless Workers Day. The work we do, you don't consider work. Why? Because it doesn't fit into a capitalist model of a work site. Because of your fear of your proximity to my houseless life? Collecting cardboard and cans and cardboard and cans. Happy Houseless Workers Day to all the workers so close to the end of a paycheck that they can't pay the lie of rent. Happy Houseless Workers Day to all the workers doing the work to stay alive, holding on by a thread just to keep a tent or a bed, unsure why they should even fight to survive, instead of disappear. Because, you know, don't you want us all to die? Yeah, you listening to PNN, not CNN, people. That's Poor People's Revolutionary Radio. From the small part of unpimped, unsold, unbought, untold Mama Earth that us houseless people call homefulness, a homeless people's solution to homelessness. And listen to Auntie Frances with her scholarship.
I was at People's Park in Berkeley. I'm a 60s radical. So I knew about congregating together. That camaraderie, that comfort of having your folks in your circle, in your campground, because that's all you had was each other. So we bonded together. We leaned on each other. Where are they feeding that now? It was a day-to-day thing. Where are they feeding that now? You know, that camaraderie. You know, you had your group, you had your campground, you had your folks, and that's what kept us.
You just heard from Auntie Frances Moore, one of the powerful poverty scholars from the new movie Crushing Wheelchairs, speaking from her experience with homelessness and the ways that we build support and communities on the streets. We have another benefit screening on the trailer September 25th at 6 p.m. at Eastside Arts Alliance. Help this powerful movie get out. We poverty scholars say we aren't acting, we're living. From eviction to more removal, once we are houseless, on today's Poor People's Radio, we speak with houseless poverty scholar from Tovengar, aka LA. We are powerful eviction resistors fighting scumlords' illegal evictions. Then we move to Hushun, aka right here in Oakland, to talk to you about yet another anti-poor people, anti-houseless people move by Oakland City Council member Ken Houston, set to make the violence we're facing even more.
Yeah, I just want to lift up our relatives right now struggling in this heat and try to be hot inside. We'll just try to be hot outside and stay alive. So many relatives, even in places like Fresno, die on the streets because of straight-up exposure. So just lifting up in prayer as we humbly move into these violent movements in this time right now that we're dealing with. I just wanted to say also, folks who heard Auntie Frances, for those of you who might be listening from Tovengar, we also will be in Tovengar, LA for the weekend of the 26th through the 28th with benefit screenings of the trailer of that powerful movie, Crushing Wheelchairs. So check us out, hit us up. We definitely want to see you. Having said that, we are blessed to have a warrior fighting these scam lords. We have so many warriors all across occupied so-called California fighting to keep relatives inside, because we all know that before we were houseless, we were housed, and most of us were evicted. So let's not ever disconnect or not get that twisted. So we want to bring in a beautiful sis from LA Tenants Union, an organizer, and just a straight-up fighter and community. See, Lali, welcome to Poor People's Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being with us today. Tell us a little bit about some of the work of the union down there and what you guys have been doing.
The LA Tenants Union is a autonomous social movement led by tenants that are also facing threats of displacement, harassment, eviction. We're not a nonprofit. We're not a service organization. A lot of us are neighbors fighting for other neighbors. And none of us are experts. None of us are attorneys. And I'm in the Echo Park local of the Tenants Union, one of the newer locals. The Echo Park local started a little over a year ago. And one of our strategies is collectivizing our problems. And so when community members come to our meetings, understanding our issues as a collective problem and that it's something that we're all responsible to fight for. And so one of the strategies is organizing sometimes whole buildings that are facing a threat of displacement, an eviction of the whole building, or harassment or slum conditions. Organizing as like a tenant association, because we believe that we have more power when we're organized together. One person might be facing something that other neighbors might also be going through. And so starting to talk to each other, making a strategy together. For example, leaders from the Mohawk Street Tenants Association were being threatened with evictions because the landlord wanted to renovate their building. Different attorneys were like, why even fight it? It's legal. Then an organizer in our local created a public pressure campaign and targeted their, as you call, their scum lord. People talk about gentrification or eviction. It always just seems like who's facing the effects, but actually someone is making a decision to do that. Who's the person that has the power to decide? Completely change the future of your life, making you potentially unhoused. Part of the strategy of the tenants union too is identifying who owns your building, who those individuals might be. Sometimes it's just like a mom and pop landlord, as they say, and sometimes it's a big corporate landlord. But at the end of the day, they have the same interest, which is to displace our people to make more money. But just like some of those landlords have more resources to do that, the big corporate landlords have more money, have more attorneys on their side. And so the Mohawk Street Tenants Association organized a public pressure campaign, so they exposed who the landlords were and targeted them with protests. They had actions in their building to invite the community to learn about their struggle and to reclaim that space. Because when your landlord is trying to evict you, they try to make you feel like you're not in your own home. They try to remind you that they own it. And so some of our strategies is reclaiming that space and having events in your yard, inviting the rest of the community. The tenants union is trying to put more stuff online, like videos and pictures documenting what we're doing to really show other people that it's possible. So we do tenant organizing and we fight for eviction. But at the end of the day, we're trying to build a mass for people's movement where our people are not just tenants. Our people are whole people. And kidnapping is a form of displacement. And so we're fighting for people to not be thrown out of their homes, but ISIS kidnapping folks to incarcerate them. That's displacement too.
Thank you so much, Silali. So much love to you, to the work that y'all are doing. You're listening to Poor People's Radio on PNN, not CNN, people. That's Poor People's Revolutionary Radio right here on Unbought, Unsold, Unpimped, Unplayed, Mama Earth in the occupied village of Ochun. That's Oakland, as the settlers call it. I wanted to shift gears a little bit and talk a little bit about what we're dealing with right here in Ochun. We're going to be inviting our sister Leger. And I want to just name that there was a whole hullabaloo about Measure W, how this is a big solution. Oh, Measure W is going to provide housing, money for housing. Right. Da, 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 da. Right. There was a whole Politrickster series of meetings. A lot of us poor folks did not get heard. They finally let us get heard later. But in all of those talks, there wasn't one mention of stopping the sweeps. And I was just like, whoa, are we like in some kind of a strange sci-fi horror movie here that nobody's in touch? And I do need to say this, that Sister Nikki Bass, who, you know, is trying to throw down, and I see her trying to do the good work, but it can't be missed that she was one of the people who signed on to the first encampment management ban. The only held out was Sister Carol Fife. So I just want to frame our conversation today, family and relatives, about this conversation about what the heck is Ken Houston doing? Leger, welcome back to Poor People's Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell listeners what the heck this politrickster Houston is talking about?
When you talk about Measure W and everybody's all hubbubbing around that, well, there's also these things going on that they're trying to slide through city council. Ken Houston is trying to really champion this encampment abatement policy that will really further criminalize homelessness under the guise of encampment management. And so what that actually means is that they're going to be more forceful with towing people's RVs without notice. They'll be destroying people's lives and taking all of their things that they need to live and survive, scattering people even more all the way across the city. What I really want to emphasize for the housed people out there, and we get it, we get that people are like, there's homeless people in front of our house, they're in front of our business, they're this, they're that, but people are getting scattered because their communities that they built, where they were kind of out of the way, like Wood Street, we were out of the way, now they're being destroyed. And then with this beautiful HMIS system and this continuum of care, people are missing their matches for housing that comes available because they don't know where to find these people at. There's also a lot of medical things that are going on. Lifelong, shout out to Lifelong, who implemented mobile clinics to actually come to us instead of us having to leave all of our things behind and go to check up on our health care. They're losing contact with their patients. And so what this is just further dehumanizing us as people that don't actually have a foundation and walls. It looks like, oh, they're cleaning up the city, but it's not. It's not cleaning up the city. It's actually making more in debt the city of Oakland, which it already is. They're in debt. That's why the cabin community on Wood Street got shut down, because the city of Oakland couldn't afford to pay the overseeing nonprofit boss. It's just further criminalization and further trauma to an already vulnerable population.
The comment mobilization that's going to happen on September 10th at 11 o'clock. Can you speak more of that, Leger?
On September 10th, there will be a public safety meeting, but there's only 4 members that sit on that committee. And so we're already anticipating that that vote will have to be pushed over to the city council meeting, which will be on September 15th at 9 a.m. It's also funny that you brought up Carol Fife. She's actually the lone warrior. Everybody else on the city council is really behind this. It's almost like it's gonna pass, unfortunately. So our approach, really, with Wood Street, with Care for Communities, Black Solutions Lab, we really want to just highlight the truth at this point. We want to say what the media isn't saying. It's not gonna solve anything. These sweeps are sucking up so much money that could be used to house people. When they're saying that they're offering shelter, that's complete BS. There's not even enough shelter beds, something like 300 in the county. There's over 7,000 unsheltered people in Alameda County. So even if people did want to take the shelter offers that are non-existent, there's not even enough shelter to offer people at this point. And so just really bringing the light to the community and the frustrated neighbors and the homeowners and the business owners, that we all need to unify together and push back on the city to stop the sweeps, free up a lot of money. You don't need 50 police officers to sweep two tents. I, a single woman, was living on Wood Street for 10 years. And I never got assaulted or anything like that. I mean, look, we got criminals in the White House. There's a few bad apples in every socioeconomic group. But when people are getting swept, when they're going through this very traumatic and painful time in their life, they're not fighting back. So the fact that they need all these city officials and all this and that and all this big equipment is just a big waste of money.
Tell people again how they can turn up, when they can turn up.
The September 15th city council meeting. We're going to be having a press conference beforehand, and then we need as many people as we can to show up and let them know why this encampment abatement plan is BS and just why it doesn't make sense. 9 a.m.
And that's at
city council. And also you can follow on Instagram at Wood Street Commons.
All right, relatives, you heard the marching orders. Let's do this. Let's show up. Let's be up, especially for housed relatives, conscious relatives who listen or watching us. Please show up. Please stand up. Just come on the 15th at 9 a.m. We need you all there.
So that's all for this broadcast of Poor People's Radio. You can follow us on Facebook, X, or Instagram at Poor Magazine, at Poverty Scholar, and Poor News Network on YouTube. You can also get this complete Poor People's Radio podcast with all the interviews and conversations of any of our previous archive shows on Apple Music, Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you get your podcasts. All power to the who? The people.
Dollar is what I need. And if I share with you my story, would you share your dollar with me?
Hard Knock Rockin' on your radio. Hard Knock Radio ain't messing around. Hard Knock Rockin' on your radio. Hard Knock Radio is in your town. Hard Knock Rockin' on your radio. Hard Knock Radio is good as gold. Hard Knock Rockin' on your radio.
This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
Lie down all in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole Variety Hour, your source for radically